Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View. This is PK, your humble, not so humble host, welcoming you back here, where I have my show every Monday evening at 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern. And as I always do, I pay homage to the suits in the office at BBS Radio. Because they, along with the mighty PK here, we always promote free speech and free thought and free inquiry. And thank goodness for alternative media. It's not these companies, a lot of these alternative media stations, they're not under corporate Zionist control. We're free to speak our minds. And thank goodness, because if it weren't for the internet at the rate that the state wants to regulate and censor even the internet, if they had their way, they could just shut it down. And of course, the two main reasons, of course, are terrorism and, of course, child porn. So that's their wedge, and that's what they would like to do. And the people who are doing this to us are other Americans, I like to remind us about. Now, you can call in here to talk with the great PK, which is I, if you want to discuss anything or debate anything, or challenge me, especially challenge me. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a fight, so to speak, because I've usually had people who are on the same page with me. I haven't had really many opponents. So anyway, the number here is 888-429-5471. A lot going on in the news as usual, and I will give my take on a few things, which is something I like to do. I give my take on things. I critique things, and I usually offer a solution. And of course, my solution is based quite often on the wisdom of coordinating the talents of others, but I like to cut to the chase and solve these problems or the different issues. Speaking of free speech and cut to the chase, I see that that naughty Rush Limbaugh has got himself in trouble because he referred to a gal that wants free. She's a law student, so there you go, who wants free, birth control. She wants the state to provide it, which means the rest of us. So I guess Rush referred to her as a slut or a whore, a prostitute, I guess. I think it was a slut. And, oh, he's in a world of trouble about that now. And he's apologized. But I think they're all missing the point is that these people like this gal, they just want to further and increase the size of the welfare state. Rush wants to increase the warfare state. This quote-unquote slut wants to increase the welfare state. And so if she gets her law degree, she can be yet another lawyer clogging up the system, helping to overregulate our whole economy, which is the problem in the first place. And so you may or may not know that I happen to be a drummer. Pretty good one at that, pretty accomplished. And most musicians would agree with this. In fact, most people who know anything about music would agree, and that is good drummers are consistent. You have to be consistent to play the beat and to keep the groove and the band together. So, but consistency obviously is not just something for drummers. It carries over. And that's why I'm consistent when I continually speak about certain ways to fix things, identifying certain problems. And the way I like to fix things is usually market through the market or market mechanisms, not more government, taxes, rules, and regulation, which seems to be the only way Obama knows things, because Obama has never run a business or had to meet a payroll. Although if he did have to meet a payroll as a community organizer, of course, that payroll, that money came from taxes. I'm not against taxes per se. I'm for micro taxes, and the majority of our taxes and wealth, the extreme majority, should stay in our states and, you know, give just a couple percentage points of that to the federal government so they can have the military and, you know, control our borders, which they're supposed to do. And those few things that, you know, are enumerated in the Constitution for the federal government, you know, mostly defense, well, they can't even do that right. And they've spent way beyond what the Constitution would call for defense. Actually, I'm with Ron Paul on this. He says, I'm not against defense spending. I'm against military spending. This ridiculously, hugely inflated military budget that so many people or conservatives would overlook. They'll criticize the welfare state, but miraculously, the military budget escapes criticism. And I'm not talking about hurting our troops or anything like that. I'm just talking about all the excessive fat at the top, including all these overseas bases. Why do conservatives want to spend so much overseas? They want small government at home. They purport that they do. But overseas, they're spending billions, trillions, over 900 military bases in over 130 foreign countries. In fact, that evil country of Iran has 45 U.S. military bases ringed around it. And now Netanyahu's back in Washington trying to goad Obama into having his way with a soon attack on Iran, which is so unnecessary, which I continue to rail against, especially when the true definition of Iran is Israel requires American naivety. So Israel with 200 to 300 nuclear weapons wants to pick a fight and start a war with Iran, who doesn't even have a nuke, who says they don't want to have a nuke. I personally don't care if they do have a nuke, because they're not going to nuke the U.S. or Europe or Israel. That's ridiculous. That is the most blatant, ignorant, Zionistic warmongering. They realize that if they attacked Europe or the U.S. or Israel, that they would be vaporized. Britain and France have the bomb. So that's not even an issue. But when a country does have nukes, the U.S. federal government doesn't bother it too much. If you look at China, Russia, North Korea, I mean, Pakistan has one and the U.S. is interfering over there. India's got one. Of course, they like to play India and Pakistan against each other. But this whole thing about Iran getting a nuke and then another preemptive war, and, you know, I say, Israel, go it alone. But when I say go it alone, I clearly mean no American money, no American aid, no more free American weapons. I strongly urge an arms embargo against Israel. So if you want to, if the Israelis want to attack Iran, go ahead, let them. But there should be absolutely no American taxes, no American blood, or no American weaponry given to you to start a war that doesn't need to be started. And as I said before, the president of Iran, nor Iran, has ever said they want to wipe Israel off of the map. That's an absolute deliberate Zionist lie in translation. What the president of Iran said was something similar to, just like the former Soviet regime vanished from the pages of history, so will, or so we want the present Zionist regime to vanish from the pages of history. That's a big difference in terminology. So I, the mighty PK, of course, will not let that go by without clarifying it, without further clarifying it. And as far as Iran denying the Holocaust or their president, it's more like, as I do, they seriously question the details. The details, the numbers, and the whole thing. I think it's quite a hoax in the sense of how it's been portrayed, that is the Holocaust, how it's been portrayed, and it ignores all the other innocent people who died in war. And as I touched on last week with Stephen Lenman, who's of Jewish ancestry, he's, I think, even coming around, not that we debated it or passed or I was cajoling him into thinking it, but that powerful Zionists and Zionist bankers, Zionist Jewish bankers in Germany, did collaborate with the Nazis and the Nazi Party in a way to uproot German and European Jews, to deliberately uproot them, especially those who didn't want to move, and move them into Palestine. The Rothschild-backed Zionists want to move the Jews to the desert. So this is something that I think is coming out too over time, because time is the greatest friend of truth. And that's what I'm interested in, the truth. So I am on my show, I make no secret of the fact that I heavily criticize Israel and Zionism and Jewish power. And of course, as my little prerequisite, as we know, and this is always the case, always, 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 any and all objective, intellectual, scholarly criticism of Israel and or Zionism and or Jewish power is automatically referred to as anti-Semitism. They try to equate anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism. And I believe that Zionism is a racist Jewish supremacist wing of the, they've hijacked the Jewish religion, Judaism, and they hide behind it. And even though I'm an atheist, I'm calling them out because I'm a non-militant atheist, but most of these Zionists are atheists or atheistic. Zionism is very atheistic, you know. So, I mean, the whole country is probably, the majority is probably atheistic because most Jews are purely secular and or agnostic and or atheistic. They practice their religion mainly as a tradition. So you have Netanyahu over here stirring up trouble, wanting American aid. He wants to pick a fight, and he wants Uncle Sam to help him. And the backlash against this will just be horrific. It will cause more terrorism in the future, more resentment, more reprisals, more damage, more death and suffering. All they need to do is leave Iran alone. Iran hasn't attacked anyone for centuries. And again, there's over 25,000 Iranian Jews living in Iran, Persian Jews, if you will. And they are not threatened, and they are not trying to get the hell out of the country. So, and of course, Zionist neoconservative talk radio and Fox News and CNN, you know, the major news media, they're all under Zionist control, mostly Jewish owners, Jewish control, pro-Israel Zionist control. So the media is all tilted towards pro-Israel. But it's nice to see Israel have its back against the wall, and a lot of other countries, especially outside of the U.S., Europe knows this, Asia, other countries, South America, some of the African countries, they know that it's always the U.S. and the Israel together voting on this and that, or, you know, at the U.N. But I'm opposed to all that because I don't like what's happening. And as I always say, Israel is not our 51st state. And nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it require American taxpayers to continuously support Israel by giving them foreign aid, and worst of all, an endless supply of American-made murder weapons. And I like to say, the U.S. had no enemies in the Middle East prior to 1948, when Israel was violently imposed on Palestine. Palestinians, by the way, who had nothing to do with World War II and the so-called Holocaust, but they've been forced to pay the price because ever since Israel was violently imposed on Palestine in 1948, the U.S. has held its hand, it's funded it, and then with the 67 war especially and the 73 war, Johnson and Nixon gave Israel more aid, more weaponry. Israel has sold our technology to the Chinese and the Soviets. They fought with Kennedy behind the scenes. Kennedy did not want Israel to have nuclear weapons. I believe it's a bunch of Zionist criminals running the country, and they hide behind the Holocaust and centuries of persecution to set up this terrorist apartheid state with 200 to 300 nukes and their despicable Samson option, which means that if they are going down in a fight or a battle or a war, they're just soon take everybody else with them, or as many as they can with them. So they'll probably nuke other parts of the world, like Europe. I mean, that's the strategic scary part of Israel with all its nukes. Look where it's located. It can easily hit Europe, Africa, China, Asia, Russia. You know, I think Israel should be forced to disarm its nukes. The sheer hypocrisy of Israel and its right-wing Likud party, which is a bunch of neocon right-wing idiots, you know, they should be forced to give up all their nukes. The sheer hypocrisy of Israel, who allows no inspections of their nuclear facilities and weaponry. They allow no inspections, have the audacity to compel the U.S. to get with them and harass Iran. So that's the problem. And then, you know, other countries might want nukes. Saudi, I mean, who knows? Other countries might want them too, maybe Turkey. So it's just ridiculous. It isn't necessary. And Israel is the problem. They're throwing stones. They're in a glass house and they're throwing stones. And they always fall back on their so-called persecution of centuries to do this stuff today. And most Americans don't get it. They've been schmoozed by a lot of their church leaders who there's so much of this disgusting Christian Zionism where we got to support Israel. You know, we've got to support Israel. It's God's country, blah, 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 blah. And the, you know, the Jews, we got to help them, you know. And meanwhile, they don't even realize that most of Jewry globally and in Israel is, you know, like I said, purely secular, agnostic, or atheistic. So the Jews of today have nothing to do with the Jews of the past or the Bible. I mean, the real Semites are the Arabs. The Jews of today are mostly Ashkenazi. They're white European and Russian Jews who settle in Israel. They're not ethnic Jews. They're not like the ethnic Jews that these militant Zionist bastards after World War II forced and compelled and pressured to force other ethnic Jews to leave Iraq and Morocco and settle in Israel. And they did this by intimidating them, by blowing up synagogues, by, you know, causing problems and staging these false flag things to scare Jews in other countries into moving into Israel. And that's the legacy of the mess today. So I'm very critical of Zionism in Israel. I woke up to this about 10 years ago and really started to see what's going on. And of course, with Jewish Zionist control of all the major media in the U.S. and the newspapers, you get such a terribly slanted point of view on all this, you know. So, you know, and meanwhile, you know, three of my greatest intellectual heroes, Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, and Ayn Rand, they're all Jewish. Their pictures are in my office. So I laugh at any kind of accusations of bigotry or racism or anti-Semitism, because that's not what I'm talking about. But I'm very down on Israel and the Israeli lobby. I mean, AIPAC is here. Obama spoke to them, I believe it was yesterday. AIPAC is a very powerful Israeli lobby. They're the most powerful of the Israeli lobbies in the country. And they're trying to compel the U.S. to get involved against Iran. So, and of course, I stand against AIPAC too. And of course, AIPAC, as I always like to say, what AIPAC really stands for, because I've defined it, and what I say is truth. AIPAC, American Israeli Parasites Against the Constitution. Boy, would I love to tell them that, and I would love to address an AIPAC convention. Of course, they wouldn't have me near it. So that is the problem, folks. America's being pulled down. Israel's boot is on America's neck, has been for years, probably over 40 years now. And it's an awful relationship. And Obama, too, it shows you the unchanging foreign policy. As he said, I support, how do you say it? Israel wants to know we have an unbroken bond between us. We're always there for Israel. We got you. You got your back. Da 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 da. Since when? I mean, what other country has such sway over America and American foreign policy and Congress? I mean, if you're not pro-Israel or you speak against Israel or Zionism, your chances of getting elected are very slim. Because if Israel doesn't like you and the lobby doesn't like you, they'll go out of their way to portray you as anti-Semitic or not friendly to Israel. I mean, if I was running for office and I knew they wouldn't kill me with the Mossad or the CIA, I would probably say, you know what? I don't want the Jewish vote. I don't care about the Jewish vote or the Zionist vote. And I'm certainly anti-Israel. I don't believe the U.S. should be funding Israel, giving them any weapons. You know, we can trade with them. We can be friendly with other countries. And by the way, you know, of course, I want to cut off all foreign aid, but especially to Israel. And I wouldn't care about the Jewish vote. I wouldn't care, and I would stand up to Jewish power. Someone's got to do it, and the control that they have over Congress and this country is more than you would ever think. And these are the Zionist crowd, the atheistic, pro-Zionist, nationalistic, the pro-Zionist Jews. I, however, am fond of saying that I stand with the anti-Zionist Jews, who are often referred to as self-hating Jews and also anti-Semitic, which is all laughable. So and this is the solution for the Middle East also, is to find common ground first and foremost with Jews United Against Zionism. I'm a big fan of their what they stand for. They may be small in number, but they're large in accuracy and truth. So the solution for the Middle East, besides cutting off all foreign aid as soon as possible, is to find immediate common ground with Jews United Against Zionism, with the Israeli peace movement, and with Israeli human rights groups. Now I ask you, with those suggestions of those three organizations, does that make me a hater? Does that make me someone who wants to deprive anybody of their rights? I think not. But it is a solution. And Americans are very naive about all this. And they're afraid to criticize Israel and Zionism and Jewish power. Although it's starting to happen. I like seeing it on Facebook and elsewhere. It's starting to happen. They don't necessarily do it as well as I do, but I've been studying it for a while now. And I'm really clued into it. And I see what's happening. And there's a lot of Mossad agents in this country. That's the Israeli CIA. And you got American troops training with Israelis. I mean, that to me, that's just poison. They are a big problem, and they want to start World War III. Meanwhile, Iran and Iraq, for that matter, have never threatened the United States. Neither did Afghanistan. It was home to terrorist groups who were training out of there, but Afghanistan, the country, the government never attacked the U.S. So this is a big problem. And 10 years in Afghanistan, going on 11, it's ridiculous. Ron Paul supported going in there, but not as war and massive military strikes per se. He thought it was okay to go in there. He voted for it in terms of what the Constitution calls for, of letters of marque and reprisal, more like sending mercenaries in to deal with criminals. However, like I like to say, I think that Osama bin Laden had absolutely next to nothing to do with 9/11. He did do other terrorist acts. He may have been behind the USS Cole in 98. I'm not sure. And that bombing in Africa and in Kenya, I think, the embassy, American embassy. But I think he had next to nothing to do with 9/11 to pull off such a highly mechanized precision attack, which I, of course, think that 98% of it was Israel's Mossad and maybe some rogue elements of the CIA. Now, and this, you know, is always debated, but I don't believe that there's any way that the planes took those buildings down by themselves. And of course, World Trade Center building number 7, which wasn't even, as I understand it, wasn't even mentioned in the 9/11 report. 5:20 in the afternoon, they pulled that one and just collapses into its own footprint. It had some fire damage, but it wasn't struck by a plane. So anyway, back to Osama bin Laden, whom, like I said earlier, I think he had next to nothing to do with 9/11. But this is how these covert false flag people work. There always needs to be a patsy. Lee Harvey Oswald was the patsy. He may have been in the loop, but I don't believe he was the trigger man. So they set him up. Lee Harvey Oswald, the patsy for the Kennedy assassination. Okay, Bobby Kennedy's assassination. Sirhan Sirhan, who it would seem may have been seriously psychologically programmed or, programmed or wired by the CIA. Or the FBI. And supposedly he goes into these deep, or used to. I heard this early on when he was questioned. He went into these deep, this deep state of mind where he couldn't be, he wasn't rational. He wasn't reasonable. He, I guess, didn't speak clearly or couldn't testify clearly or something like that. So that, you know, that shows signs of mind control. Excuse me. And of course, that's a CIA thing, mind control. North Koreans did it, so maybe the CIA learned some of that too, if they didn't already know it. And of course, that's the CIA who has drugged our troops without their knowledge with, LSD and such, many things like that. Of course, the military had our troops stand in trenches and watch nuclear bombs go off in the Nevada desert. So, again, you have the CIA and Mossad, which is Israel's CIA, and MI6, Britain's CIA, if you will. Although, maybe the CIA is Mossad West here in the U.S. So they are the masters of deception, and they need a fall guy. They need their little puppet, their little patsy. For Martin Luther King, it was James Earl Ray. And now it would seem like it might have been the FBI who were the trigger men who took Martin Luther King down. Excuse me, just getting over a cold here. So I saw this show, I think it was on PBS last year, and it showed, I didn't realize that FBI involvement, the extent of it, with Martin Luther King. And apparently there were even FBI agents who had not only infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan, but they were active in it, and they were active in causing more problems, more activities than even the Klan did, you know, to blame it on the Klan and to be able to maybe set up Dr. King even further. So this is my point about Osama bin Laden. Since he was a known terrorist and had issues with the U.S., he was the perfect guy to set up and implicate, which is why I think he had next to nothing to do with 9/11. So you set up the patsy, you get the whole world thinking that Osama bin Laden is this evil, awful guy. And you pull off this massive attack, and they get away with it. And and what you get out of it, you get the demonization of Islam. Israel benefits from it, more foreign aid, more of this, more of that. And it further expands an already massively huge U.S. military-industrial congressional complex. So I'm pessimistic about our country, the unemployment. I don't think it's getting better. I think that's a facade. And another war is just going to make it worse. And I say to conservatives, you know, these fools, these pro-war conservatives, oh, really? So you want war with Iran? Do you want to borrow more money from China to finance your wars? You know, so they get their back up against the wall on that. So, you know, this is a problem. So I believe that Osama bin Laden was the patsy. He was the bad guy they were out to blame. And then they supposedly whacked him last year at the compound. Although now I read something recently, and it was leaked by a security company that does business with, I think, the States and elsewhere. I read it online. I don't know how true it is, but it's pretty easy to believe that they really didn't dump the body, Osama bin Laden's body, at sea. And they may have taken it in a CIA plane back to the States. So that's a possibility. But I wondered at the time if that was really Osama bin Laden they dumped in the sea. And that is not a Muslim tradition anyway, unless you're at sea. But, you know, I guess they didn't want to make him a shrine anywhere else. Well, you know, for martyrs. Well, they could have shredded the body or put it in an unmarked grave or, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So who knows? And they can say anything they want. I mean, after he was supposedly killed, they kept telling us how, you know, the government and the media, but excuse me, I repeat myself, the government, media government complex was talking about how they got him. And then afterwards, they kept saying, we found on his computer his plans to do this and this and this and that. I mean, you'll never know the truth on that. Who knows what was on his computers? First of all, if it was even him. So they can say whatever they want and tell the masses, tell the sheeple that, you know, Osama did this or said this or was planning this. We'll never know the truth. Government lies are just, it's just amazing. Or the way they distort things, or even worse is when they tell half-truths. So they're good at all that. They're good at distorting and manipulating. So that's why I hardly believe any of the news anymore. It's so manipulated by the CIA and their tentacles involved in everything else. So now, moving ahead to the election, I guess tomorrow's Super Tuesday. I hope Ron Paul stays in the fight. I hope it would seem like those idiots, Santorum and Gingrich, pathetic Gingrich, who's really owned by a powerful Zionist, Jewish Zionist casino mogul in Vegas, who's given Gingrich $7 million for his campaign, especially because, you know, Gingrich is owned by the Israeli lobby and American Enterprise Institute. So he's very, very pro-Israel and pro-Zionist. So you're not going to hear any truth out of this guy. just the audacity of Gingrich even running is so pathetic, because he's so pathetic. And, you know, he thinks he's so smart, such a great historian. I think he's pathetic. You know, a great historian, one of the greatest modern ones that I know, is Dr. Thomas Woods, who not only knows history exceedingly well, but he understands Austrian economics, and he's read the great Austrian, like Ludwig von Mises and Hayek and Menger and von Bauer. So he has a deep understanding of that aspect of things too. So Gingrich is just a, you know, bloated, blustering neoconservative, a neocon, as most are the rest. And now neocon, pro-Zionist, Zionist Jew, Jewish senator, I think. Is he a senator or congressman? Cantor. Is it Mickey Cantor? Cantor from North Carolina. He's endorsed Romney, I believe. So Romney is such a vanilla, you know, milquetoast, awful guy. And he wants to be president. He's so phony to me. He's like a oily, stuffed shirt, used car salesman. So tomorrow's Super Tuesday, I guess the a lot of caucuses are held tomorrow, or primary votes. And, oh, by the way, Ron Paul came in second in Washington State. So I don't believe that Ron Paul's going to cut a deal with Romney. Now, if he was offered the vice presidency, that's something I would probably take Romney up on, because I would be a thorn in his side the whole time. I would be his conscience. You know, I would go to the people and I would speak, and, you know, he couldn't control me. And if he tried to or did, he'd either, you know, kill me, or the CIA would manipulate or drug me, whatever. But he couldn't shut me up. You know, I can't be bought and I can't be intimidated, and I have no desire to rule other people or oppress other people. Am I getting a call here? Call from, I guess not. I thought I saw it lit up. Well, the suits, you'll let me know, won't you? Anyway, so I don't know if tomorrow's winner take all or after Super Tuesday. I would love to see Gingrich lose his own state of Georgia, because he's so pathetic, and people think this guy is smart. I never liked him. I never trusted him. He's a big government Republican. Romney's a big government Republican, quote unquote, as is Santorum. So, you know, I don't trust any of them, and they're all, it's the same unending foreign policy. It's the same, regardless of who's in office. And they basically agree on everything. Just they nibble around the edges a little bit, talk about their great records, which really are nothing more than more spending and enlarging the warfare state. And Romney talks about, you know, he spent most of his time outside of Washington. You know, he isn't a typical politician, but he's a big government Republican. And are a lot of Americans going to hold their nose and vote for Romney in November? Is this country, is Romney, for example, and or Gingrich and Sanitarium, but mainly Romney, is Romney the best that this country can do? I think that's pretty pathetic. So I think Ron Paul should stay in and go all the way to the convention in Tampa. And judging by the way the Republicans have treated him in the media, you know, they're worried about him running third party. Well, I think that Obama's going to win against Romney. It might be narrow, but he's going to win. I think, again, that Ron Paul is the only Republican who can beat Romney. So I don't care if Ron Paul does run as the third party. And I would say up front, because you know they're going to persecute Rand Paul if Ron Paul runs as a third-party candidate. What he could do is say up front, have a big conference and say, as he talks about running for third party, he can say, and I realize that now you will try to persecute my son Rand and deprive him of any opportunities to run for president and work actively against them, aren't you? That is what I'm saying up in front. That is what you will do if I run third party. That is how cowardly and sheepish that you are. You'll go after my duly elected son if I run as a third party. So, and I used to think, well, because it was pointed out to me that Ron Paul could then endorse the Libertarian Party candidate, which is probably Gary Johnson, which would be fine with me because he has his faults, Gary Johnson, but he's still heads far above over those idiots, Romney, Gingrich, and Sanitarium. So I'd much rather have Gary Johnson. So that would be a way for Ron Paul to say, I'm not going to run as a third party, but I am going to endorse Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate. So that way they can't honestly gang up on Rand Paul because his father ran as a third party. Unless, of course, Ron Paul and Rand Paul ran together on the same ticket. That'd be interesting and an American first, historical first. But having said that, I still don't trust Rand Paul as much as I trust his father, Ron Paul. I think Rand Paul is too willing to play ball with the Israeli lobby and the military-industrial complex. And unfortunately, even Ron and Rand, they talk sort of off the cuff about, well, you know, if we need to go to war, we'll get a declaration of war and we'll go. And not that I'm anti-war per se or a pacifist per se, because I'm not. But, you know, just because you get in a congressional approval to go to war still doesn't mean it's just and right and righteous and proper and the truth. And this country's just been at perpetual war for the last 10 years. I mean, so many wars last century, you know, starting with the very tragic war against Spain. That was very tragic, 1898 till about 1902. Basically, when the U.S. occupied the Philippines and caused the death of hundreds of thousands of Filipinos. So, you know, more war means bigger government, means less money for important private sector goods and services, and it will just cause more problems at home and abroad, and it will cause more terrorism. You know, they've already made flying so unfun, for lack of a better word. Maybe that'll even get worse too. I just hate to see where the country's going. And, you know, I'm not in debt, but I'm very worried about where the country's going. I mean, I've been stockpiling food. I fear future food riots. I fear possibility of civil war between the haves and the have-nots. These are things I don't want to see. I don't want to see them happen. But at the rate we're going, if they cause more war and more overregulation and taxing of the private sector, we're just going to keep going down. A lot of jobs aren't coming back. This is the rise of China. So I want to see, as I like to say, I look forward to the I would love to see the total collapse of the American empire and the rebirth of the American republic. That alone would pretty much save our country from its own mess. Because the way they're doing things and spreading more war only enriches the already rich military industrial complex, the heads of that, and they continue to benefit, and they're all gouging at the tax trough. They haven't earned that money in a competitive marketplace. I know there has to be defense, and I wouldn't have a problem with, you know, with some of it. Or obviously we need, you know, companies to manufacture good, you know, military weapons and whatnot. But it's just the magnitude of it and the number of firms and, you know, stationing troops overseas and giving Israel free caterpillars to raise Palestinian homes and olive trees and property. Just awful. So, like I like to say, the U.S. federal government not only screws up everything at home, but it does abroad, too. It's 95%, maybe 97% beyond what its constitutional duties are. Oh, and I forgot to say it because I'm sure they're listening in and monitoring those pricks from the CIA, FBI, NSA, all you guys who are listening into my show, you other Americans whose jobs come down to hassling other peaceful Americans, trying to snoop in their business, censor them, record them, wiretap them, all your sneaky BS. Hello to you guys. Thanks for continuing to wreck our country and take things down. You know, of course, the CIA being the masters of deception. I wouldn't mind if they just collected information, you know, hopefully to keep us safe. But, you know, I don't buy into this war propaganda crap about our enemies. They keep talking about our enemies. They're not my enemies. Iran is not my enemy. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, they're not my enemies. The federal government is my enemy and your enemy too, whether you realize it or not. And these so-called enemies, they become enemies because of U.S. foreign policy of the federal government intervening politically and militarily in all these other countries. And they're tired of it. We should be too, but most Americans are clueless to what their government's doing overseas and the pinpricks it does to other countries, antagonizing, aggravating. You know, you got this huge military budget, so, well, we got to use it sometimes. Let's have some wars somewhere. So, you know, that's a big problem, instigating wars. It's one thing to be defensive and, you know, defend your country and your people against wars, but who's going to attack this country? What other country is going to attack this country? Terrorists are not a nation state going to attack. So by not antagonizing other countries, excuse me, with this awful interventionist U.S. foreign policy, by not antagonizing other countries, intervening militarily and politically in their business, you won't have these so-called enemies. You won't have these additional people from outside of the world that want to harm America or Americans. The difference is, I get it. I understand why they're doing this. And also the tragic drug war. What a waste and a mess that is. That's about, since its inception, it's probably about a $1 trillion waste of our taxes down yet another government rat hole. So what do you have in the meantime since then? Stronger, harder drugs, even some cheaper and more available. So just like Randolph Bourne said, war is the health of the state. Well, it really is. And the U.S. federal government has instigated and enabled more war and fraudulently got our people involved in it. And, you know, when I was younger, I thought, yeah, we won, da-da-da-da. The great U.S., our government beat so-and-so, Germany or Japan, da-da-da-da-da. But I never questioned the motives. I knew, didn't know all the details. Maybe the people didn't know that much either because it wasn't, it was maybe 20 years after the war, World War II. So fresh into people's minds are, yes, we defeated Germany and Japan. But what are all the other details of that? What did FDR do to push us into war with Churchill? So when you find out these other left out details, you see, so that's why I can't get behind the federal government at all. I have no loyalty or patriotism to the federal government. You know, like I like to say, my patriotism is to the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the U.S. Constitution. That's where my patriotism is. And I can use it as a hammerlock if I'm debating people on YouTube or elsewhere, especially conservatives, you know. And I like to hang them up on this. I'll say to someone, so let me get this straight. Are you pretty much a strict constitutionalist? Oh, yes, I am. Yes, I am. I'll say, well, you know, so am I. And then I'll get into, for example, would say to them, so remember, you know, you've said you're a strict constitutionalist. Then what is it you don't understand about the Eighth Amendment to the Bill of Rights, which, of course, is part of the Constitution, and you're a strict constitutionalist? What don't you understand about the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment? What don't you understand about that? And certainly, if any enemy combatants are in American, they're being held by Americans in jail or off the battlefield, how can you torture them? You took an oath to defend the Constitution, and it prohibits torture. No cruel and unusual punishment. You mean to tell me that even if you're outside of this country, but you have so-called enemy combatants under American control, that it's okay to torture them? And I said this to a World War II vet. I said, how can it be? And he was angry that I said this, but he couldn't disagree. I said, how could it be torture when the Japanese waterboarded our troops? But when our troops do it, it's not. And I love these kind of questions because he didn't have an answer. His back was against the wall. So those are the kind of questions I like to ask. Like the one, this is my hammerlock. And I, of course, have pissed off some other veterans and chicken hawks with this one. And that is, what do you have to say, those of you who put Ron Paul down and criticize him, hate on him, for those people who hate on Ron Paul or greatly dislike him, da-da-da-da-da, what is your message, or what do you have to say to the growing number of veterans and active duty military who enthusiastically support Ron Paul, both morally and financially? What do you have to say to them? You know, would you smear them like you do the rest of us Ron Paul supporters? Would you call these veterans and active duty, would you call them unpatriotic or traitors? Would you call them kooks and nuts? So that's a question that they don't like. And I stipulate, you know, you can't answer this with a question. You can't dance around it. You can't say, well, Obama did this or Clinton did this. No, that's not the answer. Or Bush said this or did this, or even Obama did this. I want an answer of what your message is to the growing number of veterans and active duty military who support Ron Paul. Those growing numbers. And they, you know, they didn't even talk about the February 20th march on Washington from the Washington Monument, where there's hundreds, if not a couple thousands, of veterans, many of which are Iraq war veterans. And there was a rally, march for Ron Paul, who I think Ron Paul was even a captain in the military. I believe he was a captain in the Air Force. So they ought to be calling him Captain Ron Paul, because, you know, so many people that don't like him keep talking about his credentials. Well, I like his economic policies, domestic economic policy, or his domestic issues, but I don't trust him on foreign policy, his foreign policy issues. You know, so that's where I like to ask that question. If so many veterans are behind him, why, you know, why do they keep putting him down, or why do they question his foreign policy? So that is an interesting thought, take on things, of course, because I said it, but it is relevant. And there is a growing number of vets that are waking up. What is an endless supply of vets going to keep just fighting all these wars that Washington continues to start? so they can get the military budget passed and make us think that country A or country B is our enemy, you know, without admitting that they enable them, that they hide the truth. And Obama does it so well. He's a great speaker, a great orator, but it's just, it's such BS. The content is weak. And he's such a willful participant with the globalist New World Order crowd, because Obama, like I like to say, might as well just be a mixed race, blue blood, skull and bones member, because he's cut right out of that mold of that Northeast establishment. And he's playing their game. I mean, I can't believe that his side didn't crucify him for signing the Military Detention Act. How awful is that? They keep giving him a pass. That idiot Bill Maher would gave $1 million to an Obama PAC. Bill Maher, who was a Ron Paul fan. Bill Maher, who's into free speech, supposedly. That's pretty shocking. I'd love to lay into Bill Maher. I'd love to debate Bill Maher. He's starting with, you know, Bill, you're just a gatekeeper for the left, and you're very pro-Zionist. You protect Israel. It's that whole kind of mentality. So there you have it, folks. Well, it looks like the mighty PK here has come to the end of his show. So as I sign off here, thank you for listening, folks. And I am here every Monday evening here on bbsradio.com. Station 2, and I am on at 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. Every week, I bring you my take on things, my fearless take on things, because I'm not afraid to confront powers that be, nor am I afraid to confront Zionism. So I give myself a lot of bravery for that. So, folks, until next week, this is your mighty host, the unstoppable PK, saying goodnight and thanks for listening. Thank you.